Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Vipolis, and this is Up in the Rafters, where I'm joined by my guy and Carolina basketball legend and 2017 national champion, Justin Jackson, to talk about all things Carolina basketball. Sometimes we deviate away from that. And before we get started today, last week, I ugly danced on the Cowboys' grave. It was like the meme where I show up to my biggest hater's funeral. I got to give you the floor. Cooper Rush won it.
I mean, all I have to say is in Rush we trust, man. That's all I have to say,
You were right, though. They were going to fight, and they were going to find ways.
Look, there's really nothing in my life that I support or that I do that has any kind of quit in it. And so when it comes to the Cowboys, they've had their ups and downs, but they're not going to quit, Even if their star quarterback goes down or something else happens, there's no quit. So you can always count on that, and obviously Cooper Rush, he's going to take us to the promised land until Dak gets back.
Yeah, and the biggest proof of karma in the world is I do a little 1-2 tap on the Cowboys. I fly out to Las Vegas to see the Raiders. They're up 20-0, and they lose 29-23 in overtime. And one of the most heartbreaking games I've ever seen in person. So this was a lesson to me. Don't celebrate a week one performance. It's too early in the season. Once I'm not celebrating anything Cowboys until the graphic comes out where it says like eliminated and it's confirmed. But with today's podcast, Justin, we'll go entirely with a mailbag of questions taken both on social media and the premium message board from Carolina fans. The first question I have from you, for you is, from your experience as both an NCAA and NBA champion, what qualities would you say a championship team normally has on and off the court?
Ooh, there's quite a few. I think they're both different, to be honest. I think college-wise, it's a super close-knit team. I know from my experience, I can't necessarily speak for, the 2005 team or the 2009 team. But I know from my experience, we did a lot of things together off the court. We loved being around each other, whether it was just going to get food, whether it was going to see a movie, whatever it was, we did a lot of things together because that just kind of creates even more chemistry once you be on the court. And then off, obviously you have to have a team full of workers, guys that, you know, don't mind putting work in, guys that are willing to sacrifice for each other. I think that's a big thing because especially in college, everybody's goal is to make it professionally. So being able to put kind of your individual success, you know, to a certain extent to the side for the good of the team is huge. And then once you get to the, you know, pro level, it's a little different because, you know, in the NBA, you have probably, you know, two or three guys that are like your top guys. You know, for me with the Bucks, it was like Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Jrue Holiday. Those three guys were like our three guys that we rode, you know, kind of the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so you know that, and then everybody else just plays a role, right? Like PJ Tucker, everybody knows he's like the defender, team guy. And then you have all the other guys underneath that. And for me, like even me, I didn't play pretty much the whole playoffs, but being there to encourage guys, being there to be a good teammate, you know, communicate whenever maybe I would see something or whatever. You know, everybody has to play a role. And so I think a lot of it is being selfless and just kind of, you know, focusing on what the team needs at a certain extent. So that's probably the biggest factor.
You kind of went into the next question from a listener, but the context of this question relates to players who have NBA and professional ambitions. How do you balance playing for the broader team versus accomplishing your individual aspirations?
I think there's a happy balance. I think there has to be a certain amount of work that you put in individually for yourself that ends up helping the team collectively, right? Like, so, you know, you're not necessarily just saying, okay, whatever the team needs from me, that's what I'm working on, right? Like, you're working on yourself, you're working on your conditioning, you're working on your jump shot, you're working on whatever it is possible for yourself. You know, the things that you need to work on to possibly make it to the next level. And that just helps the team. And then once the season comes, you kind of see how guys fall into their roles, you know, once the season kind of gets going, you know. So, like, we'll see once the season goes, like, where Caleb Love, RJ, Armando, you know, Leaky, kind of where their roles start to shift. Whether it's, you know, RJ's on the ball, Caleb's off the ball, Mondo's getting the ball on the block all the time, or he's playing a pick and roll all the time, whatever it might be, like, you kind of start to see the roles start to shift into what the team needs. But it all goes back to what individuals have been working on all summer and what they need to do to get to the professional level.
How much did that team basketball aspect play into your decision to go to Carolina in comparison to going to a school like Duke, who it was a lot more NBA friendly offense, where I say NBA friendly because it's just essentially guys playing ISO ball and and kind of showcasing their talents.
Yeah. I mean, I went into college not really thinking that I was a one and done, you know, even though I was, you know, I went in with Theo and Joel and we were all three top 20 recruits. I don't know if we ever really thought that we were going to just go there for a year and be out, which kind of helped, I think, all of us just go in there and work to, you know, help the team in whatever ways we needed to. And so I think the team aspect, and for me in recruiting, like, kind of the whole family aspect was huge for me. You know, like, I was leaving, you know, Texas to go all the way to North Carolina, to go to school. And so I wanted to go somewhere where I felt like, you know, the coaching staff I was really close with, the players I was really close with. So kind of the team, you know, atmosphere and things like that was probably the biggest factor for me. I know there's a lot of guys who nowadays, especially, you know, they just look for a school that could possibly, you know, be like a, you know, a stop, you know, so that they can get to the NBA. But for me, I just looked at it as I wanted to go to North Carolina because I kind of liked the family atmosphere. I liked, obviously, the history. And then the team that was there already, I liked that a lot.
Yeah, related question, five-star recruit, top 10 player in the class, going to a school as big as North Carolina, was that ever a challenge handling the expectations that come with being that highly regarded at a school that big?
I think there were times maybe. I've talked about it before, but I love Carolina fans, but when things don't go well, you know, they definitely have things to say about it. And so going in kind of with those accolades and kind of being regarded in that way, I still needed time once I got to school to adjust to the college level of play. You know, like I needed to get stronger. I went in freaking bones. I needed to get stronger. I needed to get a little faster. I needed to work on, you know, my jump shot once I got there. But everybody expects, because you're highly regarded coming out of high school, they expect you just to be able to step right onto a college basketball floor. And there are some players that can, but they expect you to just step onto the college basketball floor and just, okay, average 20, carry the whole team to the promised land, you know? But just like I said previously, once I got to school, all of those, you know, ratings and all that kind of stuff, it goes out the window. I got there and it was like, okay, I started, but I was probably fourth or fifth guy when it came to like the totem pole, you know? So it was a matter of me finding what my role was once I got there, which was totally different. You know, all of us coming out of high school, like we're the number one guy, right? We get the ball probably 80% of the time in a game. We're probably shooting most of the shots. And then once I got to school, I was setting back screens, right? Trying to go get offensive rebounds. Like it was totally different from what it was in high school. And so I think fans have to realize that things totally change from one level to the next. And it takes some people a little bit longer. Some people can hop right in and be that guy. But for me, it took a little bit longer. And so I had to kind of adjust to it.
Something else that I don't think fans can quite understand is, what is it like getting around campus? Because like any college student or any person, there's going to be days where you have bad days or you have bad games, and you're 6'8". Everybody knows who you are. You can't really hide from that.
Yeah, it's I think which looking back, I kind of wish that I was a little more outgoing, I guess I would say. I walked around campus with my headphones on all the time. So I didn't really like whether it was a good game or a bad game. Like I was kind of shut off. But yeah, it is tough. You know, for instance, like when we lost in the national championship, I mean, it was, when you walked around campus, it was like you didn't even have to look around. You knew everybody was looking at you. And it was like, it was either a look of disappointment, they felt bad for you, or they were angry, you know, like it was like, there was
some
no good
or looks. Some combination of the three.
Yeah, some of those. So it's like, you know, for fans, obviously fans are fans. Like they're going to support you. They're going to have things to say if something's not going right or they see something different. But I think we've talked about it before. Like at the end of the day, no matter if we're making money, no matter if we're at school on a scholarship and supposed to be, you know, this great team, like we're all humans. You know what I'm saying? Like we still have hearts. Like we still have emotions. You know what I'm saying? Like we still are people. And so, you know, just take it easy whenever things might not go the way that everybody thinks they're supposed to go.
The next question I have from somebody is, with practice set to begin in a few days, how do you expect the preseason and Hubert Davis's approach will be different from a year ago? By comparison, how did Roy Williams handle the 2017 preseason compared to 2016?
Honestly, Coach was a little more – he was a little tougher on us, to be honest, going into the 2017 team. And I think it was because he had these expectations of us already that we had set the year before, and he knew that we could make it back to where we wanted to make it. Plus, it helps when you have guys that are already – that have already been there. You know, this team is, when you look at this team, it's like very similar to our team in 2017. It's guys that have, you know, the majority of the guys made it to the championship game last year. you sprinkle in a few freshmen that come in that might be able to provide some minutes. So you don't really have to go to the basics. You know, I'm sure the first couple of days will be a little more of teaching and trying to get concepts and plays and stuff like that put in. But once you get those put in, then you can just start working on, okay, what is it that we need to do to get back to that championship game and finally win it? But I know for my junior year, we always did, like, with the conditioning, it kind of started with conditioning. And we always did the 12-minute run. And the 2017 year, I think it was seven. I want to say it was like you had to get six and a half laps on the track in 12 minutes. And that year, I think he changed it to seven. You know, obviously for like the guards and the wings, like we can make that happen. Yeah. It's not terribly hard, but like for all the bigs, it was like, well, dang, all right. We got to really book it. So that was just like one of the things that coach did, I think, just trying to push us to try to get even better, to try to make it back to where we were. So I would probably expect Coach Davis to be a little harder, and to also expect more from the guys that have been there. I think that's big. So,
yeah. And the thing that I've loved to see with Hubert Davis is, even though he's replacing a legend in Roy Williams, he stayed true to himself. The best example I can think of that is the Patriots in the NFL. Like one of their assistant coaches leaves, they go to their new spot trying to be Bill Belichick. And then, you know, within a season or two, they're out of town because you can't just go somewhere and be the next Bill Belichick. What would you say the biggest difference in your eyes is between Coach Davis's approach and Roy Williams' approach?
I think it's just a little newer age, I guess I would say. You know, Coach Williams he's obviously, you know, in my opinion, the best coach to ever coach college basketball. But he was very like set in his ways, and it worked. It won games, it won championships, but there wasn't much of moving from what he did in 2005 compared to 2017. And then you go to Coach Davis, and obviously Coach Davis played at Carolina. He was coached by, you know, some of the great coaches at Carolina, but he still has his own, schemes and concepts that help the game today, right? Like you see more pick and roll, you see more, movement and, pin downs and, just things like that, as opposed to just coming down, secondary break, setting back screens, getting the big to the block, playing with two bigs. You see a lot more picking and popping with Coach Davis now, as opposed to just picking and rolling. So I think he's just kind of brought some concepts that translate more to today's game. And so I think, especially with the personnel that they have on the team, you know, now having Nance, last year, obviously having Brady and putting him in different actions where he's picking and popping, as opposed to just setting back screens for him and having him go to the block every time. I think he's just kind of bringing some new concepts that just help the personnel that's there at the, you know, on the team right now.
Last question from the listeners was, during your time at Carolina, was there a UNC employee outside of the coaching staff that really aided you in your maturation as a ball player, student, or individual?
An employee?
Just the non-coaching staff. So
like
not a head coach or assistant.
Would a manager be considered an employee?
Yeah, you could count it.
Okay. I think, and I could probably speak for probably Luke and Kenny as well. Like we still have a group chat with two of our former managers, which we're close with basically all of them. Forrest Reynolds, Chase Bingle, T. Haig. We were close with all of the managers. And obviously, you can't leave out the girls, Merv and Maggie. My sophomore year, I guess. But Chase and Tyler, those two in particular, and Forrest, I put Forrest in there. They would be kind of the main guys that would come back with us at night and shoot and rebound for us. So they were huge for us as far as just getting extra work in, getting extra reps. You know, and then we'd go to Old Chicago afterwards and they would join us, you know? So it was like, it wasn't all basketball necessarily with them. It was just growing friendships and kind of going through the whole college grind together. And I think those guys were huge for us. Obviously, you can't leave our academic advisor, Jen, out. She helped us get through some tough times at times. But, you know, those guys, our managers, we definitely had some of the best managers in the country. So those guys were huge for us.
Yeah, shout out to the managers. They're basically on call, where it's like, if one of you guys is like, hey, it's 11:30, I want to get shots up, do you mind rebounding? You know, they're at the gym by 11:32.
Exactly. They're there. Yeah.
But that is all we have this week. We have live action with Hubert Davis on Friday. We will be back sometime next week to give our recap of it. But Justin, appreciate the time. Appreciate everybody listening.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.